This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here August 24th, 2020. And what are we going to talk about? Estate planning for young and adult children. Now, who better to lead us in that than Ann Sullivan, attorney at law, fellow seminar presenter.
Hi.
And good morning, Ann.
Hi. How are you doing, Bob?
Well, everything's good now. We're taxiing down the runway. We're a little liftoff. And Lacey, are you on board?
I'm on board.
Okay. Lacey is an attorney at law as well. And we're talking about estate planning for young and adult children. So when somebody first comes in and maybe doesn't know what to expect or doesn't maybe wonder, why am I going to an attorney for doing estate planning for young and adult children? What's the icebreaker?
Well, Bob, I just want to take a step back for a second. This is Lacey Yagan. I want to just say that I'm an attorney with Handler & Levine in Bethesda. I work with Ann. And Ann and I were so excited to present on this topic. I just had a baby 6 months ago, so I'm a new parent, and Ann has two kids herself. And we wanted this show to help people, parents and grandparents, with minor and young adult children and grandchildren. But these ideas are applicable to everyone. Everyone could benefit from some of the tips that we're giving. We want to empower people to make decisions that are of the utmost importance to their families. We hope to cover some different things today, including executing beneficiary designations, choosing fiduciaries, and deciding how to leave assets to your beneficiaries. And in the course of this discussion, we have a few different themes here. When choosing a fiduciary, and that is your agent, your power of attorney for under your power of attorney or healthcare directive, your personal representative or your trustee, you want to name somebody you can trust with common sense. And then another theme that you'll hear us say a lot is don't let perfect get in the way of better in regards to estate planning. Planning for the future is better than no planning at all.
I like that.
And I wanted to, and Bob, just to sort of answer your question about why see an attorney, we as Lacey said, we're moms, we have kids. I think anybody can benefit from estate planning, but we've been thinking about this a lot with COVID. And what we find, and even if I go in and talk to a large group of people with NITP when I'm doing lectures for federal employees, you can ask people who here has done their estate planning, and you might get a show, even in an audience of 100, of maybe 10 people raise their hand. It's many people and parents do not do their estate planning because they for many reasons. I think they don't always know who to pick as guardian or who to, you know, they're a little bit worried about going to see an attorney and they get anxious about it. But the real benefit is that the attorney can help you break through and work through some of these considerations. Like, whereas you might think, I can just jump on the computer and just do a will. Well, that doesn't cover everything. You want to make sure you do comprehensive estate planning, particularly when you have children. And that's the real benefit of going into, I see a lawyer, they will point out things that you might not be aware of or know.
What would be a common example of, I come in and I know why I'm there, but I'm not sure why I'm there. And let's say my perception is, well, I need to have this document drafted, but I'm not so sure what I want. So how do you coach me as to what I should?
Well, I think part of what we do is, you know, and that's why we wanted to talk about sort of the different documents that everyone needs. Because you're absolutely right. Like, people don't know. The most that a lot of times people think is, you know, I better have a will. But we'll step back and we'll say, look, there's lifetime documents and estate planning. And then there's how your assets pass at death. And the lifetime documents are a power of attorney and a healthcare directive. And if you have children, there's something called a temporary power of attorney for minor. And those are often overlooked documents, but they're so important because you're not just worried about your children once you pass. That's certainly a huge consideration. But another point is just like, what happens if you're in the hospital, if you're in an accident and you can't take care of your children or manage your own affairs? How do bills continue to get paid? How are your children going to be taken care of in those circumstances?
And so Ann and I were hoping to kind of go through these documents, not in great detail, but just for people who are listening to kind of jot down some ideas that they should bring up to their attorney, maybe if they're in a meeting one day, things that they should consider. So the first document, which Ann and I will tell you, I think is hands down the most important document, is the power of attorney for financial and legal matters. This allows you to designate somebody, an agent or attorney in fact, to have access to your assets for your benefit and to make legal decisions for you if you are incapacitated. It does terminate at your death. That's something that comes up in a lot of meetings. People don't realize that. But it gives your agent the power to stand in your shoes, pay your taxes, access your bank account. They're different. They come into effect at different times, and if I had more time, I'd go into detail, but just generally either immediately when they're executed or springing. And so talking about naming an agent, again, this is our theme, someone you trust with common sense. Ann, do you think young adult children make good agents? What are your thoughts on that?
So one set of clients, Bob, that we often get are people that have children that are, they're not young children, but they're just launching. They're people who are going to get their first job, they're in college, they're in their 20s or something like that. And oftentimes you see this thing where parents come in and they don't want to leave the money outright to their children. They want to put in trust, but then they'll say, I think I'll, you know, appoint my 18-year-old to be my agent under my healthcare directive. Or if I'm not able to manage my bills, I'm going to appoint my 18-year-old to manage bills. So to your point, Lacey, like I generally do not, we don't recommend that, right? Because they're so busy at that point in time. And that's a huge responsibility to either pay someone's bills, let your parents' bills, and deal with all aspects, file their tax returns, do all of these things under the power of attorney when you're that age. But also later on in the healthcare directive, I also wouldn't recommend that. That's a separate, by the way, lifetime document estate planning. It allows you to appoint somebody that you trust to talk to doctors and deal with end of life decisions for you if you can't. And also to ask a child to, I'm sorry, I'll be blunt, but like to do something like end life support, do that at age 18 is really difficult. So yeah, no, I generally would say they can be maybe in their 30s, but in early 20s, it's not generally a good idea, you know, to do that.
And another thing about the healthcare directive is you want to name somebody who's a good advocate for you. So again, maybe somebody, as Ann said, is just launching, doesn't have that ability to stand at the hospital bed and tell the doctor what your wishes are for your health care decisions. But they can be added as for under HIPAA authority, so the doctors can speak to the child, and that's always something that I recommend clients do, that they add their adult children so they can speak to the doctor but not necessarily be the person acting out their decisions.
So in today's world, rather than the clients coming in, do you do things like Zoom meetings?
Yeah, absolutely. Most of our work at this point, you know, we do things on Zoom or Skype or telephone. That is, by the way, a big reason we're getting a lot of calls. Our practice is pretty busy at this point because people are concerned. They haven't done their documents, and then they're like, wait, with everything going on, like a pandemic, they're thinking about that. But you can do a lot of things through Zoom, but just be aware in the state you live in, not all states allow for remote signing. Where we're practicing in Maryland, the governor has temporarily allowed this. There's lots of requirements behind this, though. But a lot of states don't have remote notary and remote witnessing together. And so you may need to go to the law firm to sign your documents. But hopefully, you know, you just want to make sure that the protection's in place so you feel safe doing that. But yes, a lot of the initial meetings are done remotely, and we found that it works just fine.
I would think they would, and maybe even a little bit more comfortable because the clients aren't coming into an environment that they're used to, or even maybe the first time in the office. But they're at home, and you both have a very pleasant manner, and it's clear what you're talking about. So once they're in and you talk and you start to explain things, what kind of questions come after the light bulb goes off and they go, I think I get this now, but what if? What would be some examples of questions that they would ask you? Not necessarily that you were surprised at, but is there a common or a number of common questions that you go, oh, okay, I thought somebody would have a handle on that?
Yeah, we get Lacey, jump into with this. So with parents, the number one question you get is, who's going to take care of, they might know the initial person who would be the guardian in the will. And I just want to be clear here. Guardianship, even if you do an alternative to a will called a revocable living trust, you name the guardian if you have minor children always in the will. And one of the things that stops people is they don't know, they disagree with their partner or spouse, or even they're not sure if they're single parent, like how the other parent is involved. But like, how do you pick a guardian? But also, who's going to manage the money? Because sometimes you have a person who's going to be, who'd be great with your kids, but they can't manage money. They're a little worried, like, how does that work? And then moving back to healthcare directives, some questions you get are like, what if I'm in the hospital with COVID? People who are remarried and have kids from a first marriage are often asking like, well, I want my spouse to live in the house that I lived in, but I want to make sure my kids get something from the first marriage. These are things that I hear. How about Lacey? What kind of questions do you get?
Definitely the guardian question. I would say that is the number one thing that is stopping people, especially people I know, friends with and family, from doing their documents. They cannot agree on a guardian. So what I always tell them is what I said at the beginning, don't let perfect get in the way of better. It is much better for you to name somebody, even if he or she isn't perfect, because if you don't have a guardian, the court will appoint one, and it usually is a family member, but it might not be the person that you would want raising your kids if both you and your spouse are gone. So questions that I always want to discuss with a client, even if they come in saying, I want my mother to be the guardian, and we get that a lot too, wanting your parents to be the guardian of your children. The questions are, where does this person live? Will your children move in with them? Will the guardian move into your house to live with the kids? How old is the guardian? And if it is somebody who's older, like their parents, I would recommend that they name somebody behind them. Always have a generation below, just in case something happens to them. And that's always a tough discussion, right, Anne? People hate thinking about, what's worse than thinking about yourself passing away is thinking about your parents or your kids passing away. And sometimes that can lead to some awkward discussions, but it's so important to name your guardian in your will. That is something I love having that conversation with people, because it feels like we really can help and make a difference just by shedding some light on the issue for them.
Very good.
I think it overcomes a big hurdle.
Mm-hmm. And so the second part of that is, and Anne touched on this, like, how will your guardian pay your children's expenses? So if both you and your spouse are gone and you leave money to your child, how should that money be left? Well, we would definitely recommend you don't leave money to your child outright, because that would cause a guardianship having to be opened up on behalf of your child. We recommend that you leave your money to your children in a testamentary trust. And what that does is that stretches out the payments to the child, so they don't get a lump sum at an early age. And I could go into trust, and I'd like to in a few minutes, but I think we're getting close to
the break.
Yeah, so we can talk about that. Yeah.
Okay, why don't we do that, and we'll be right back after the good folks from WEPA, the folks that sponsor the show, tell you what they can do.
Life insurance is a conversation worth having. As a civilian federal employee, you have access to exclusive coverage from WEPA, the life insurance choice of over 46,000 feds and their families. With WEPA Group Term Life Insurance, you can apply for up to $1.5 million in portable coverage at a competitive price. Last year, the average Fed who switched saved $375. WEPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. WEPA has been insuring the future of feds and their families for more than 75 years. To learn more about life insurance for feds by feds, visit waepa.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today talking with Ann Sullivan, Esquire, Lacey Yagan.
Hi.
Hi. And we tour the seminar circuits together. We do mid-career retirement planning seminars to federal audiences, and for a fair number of years, right, Ann?
Yeah, I've been. I was trying to think back. I think I've been speaking for NITP for the last 12 years. I've been practicing since '99, but yes, for a long time we've been on the same circuit.
Okay. And you're kind enough to be here today to share the knowledge for people that maybe didn't go to the seminar or just people that would be interested in the topic, estate planning, as it relates to both young and adult children. So prior to the break, we were not fully finished, I don't think, with the subject, but I forget where we left off.
I think, and Bob, just jump in and ask questions because we realize, like, if we're going through this, you might have a thought with us too. But we were talking about appointing a guardian, and also something that stops parents from going in and doing their estate planning documents is they don't know who to pick. And so Lacey went through how to pick somebody, but also we were tying in like sort of testamentary trust with that, like how do bills get paid? So one thing just with guardianships that I want to mention with a couple thoughts is that with special, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that might be listening that have children with special needs, and that means, and they have to be X, that's another reason they're not sure quite who to pick. And yes, you want to have somebody who's sensitive and understands how to take care of your child, but it is a big worry for people. And one thing is it's so important to set up the right type of testamentary trust for those children. But also a lot of those folks have something called attorneys. We have letters of intent or instruction that people might keep in a journal, or some people actually have a video and they update it, but they might keep it by their bedside and it's updated over time. But it's something that gets more in detail about how they want their children to be taken care of if they pass, like where their doctors are, like what medications they take, and all kinds of considerations. But that's sort of where we left off. We can talk about testamentary trust or guardianships.
Yeah, I wanted to just go through a couple things about trust for minor children. And this is more if special needs are not a consideration. But what should a trust for a minor child look like? It should hold all the assets, and the trustee should distribute those assets for health, education, maintenance, and support. So what does that mean? That means health, of course, pay medical bills, education, pay for schools. That could also mean boarding at college. Maintenance and support are just living expenses. Maybe the guardian moves into the house, and you can add to your testamentary trust that you would like your child's trust to pay for expenses such as the electric bill and things like that. Our trust for minor children include outright distributions of trust principal when the child reaches certain age milestones. So maybe when the child graduates from college or is 22, we give 5%. We want to give a little bit to the, you know, younger adult child so they can kind of experiment with the money. We definitely do not want to give a 22-year-old $1 million in cash outright. That seems like that would be a mistake. And then another kind of consideration is, I mentioned my son is 6 months old. I have no idea what he's going to be like when he's older. So I want to give my trustee a ton of discretion to do what he or she thinks is best. So I want him to be able to push out more money if he believes my son is doing what he should be. If he's enrolled in school, if he I want him to be a lawyer. So if he becomes a lawyer, and I want law school paid, things like that. But if my son's doing something that maybe I would not agree with, I want to also give my trustee the power to hold back those distributions. And that doesn't necessarily have to be drugs or alcohol, but could be paying tuition for a girlfriend.
Good example. So let's pretend I come in and I'm asking questions and I go, well, why should I do this? I mean, why should I plan? Just like you said, it was very, very precise, but why can't it be general? There would be X dollars and whoever's handling the affairs would use their, I won't say common sense, their better judgment. And you know that the topic of better judgment is going to be heard by different ears. So that's why it ought to be in writing. This is a definition of what you want. How difficult does that sometime become? Somebody might feel you're going too deep or it's too analytical. How do you get over that? They're not bad people. They just don't always think in that detail.
No. And I think, like, you know, a very common thing, by the way, and even for federal employees to see is that for their beneficiary forms, so for FEGLI and TSP and other documents, they'll name their children as minor, direct minor beneficiaries. Grandparents even do this with them in a well-meaning way. Like, we see this every couple of years with FEGLI. They'll name the minor children, and they're like, or what they'll do is they'll name the guardian. Like, let's say they want their brother to take care of their kids or something. They'll say, like, they'll just put their brother on these forms. Or they'll say, just put my brother, leave all the money to my brother. Like, he'll do the right thing and take care of my kids. And why not? That's simple, right? But the thing is a couple things here. Like, if you do that, you would never want to name the guardian directly as the beneficiary of your estate. Because what will happen is if they die or something, like, you can't be assured that they'll use the money the right way. But also if they die, then the money's going to go according to their either state statute or their estate plan, which is probably not going to go to your children. Or if you don't have a plan at all, what can happen is there's some level of probate generally, you know, in all states. And it's state statute, if you don't have a will, that determines where your assets go. And yes, that might mean that your children are going to get it, but that means they're going to get it at 18 directly. And also someone's going to have to jump in and the court's going to have to point like a guardian and trustee of these funds. And even if it's not appropriate for them to get it, then they're going to get it, you know, outright at 18. FEGLI doesn't release funds to minor children. And even in those cases, we have a couple cases each year where a parent or grandparent will, like you say, leave the money directly to a minor child. And then what happens is that the surviving parent or someone else has to step in and pay about $3,000 to $5,000 to go to court and get a court-ordered guardianship over those funds. And then they still have to give them at 18 under the law. So the whole point of the estate planning process is to bypass this. You decide who you want to have as to manage your kids' funds if you can't. You decide who's going to be the parent, you know, the guardian for your children if you can. And you decide when this trust ends, which is normally later, like at age 30 or something like that. Because the worst thing, it's very hard to do planning. We know this, but like, you don't want people fighting over your children. But I know I've told you this before. The saddest thing or the hardest thing is if no one fights over your child. You know, you don't want your children without a guardian in place. You don't want, you know, the court appointing or having your child end up in foster care too. So that's really, it allows you to bypass all of those court sort of statutory and court decisions for you. You get to control it.
Many years ago, I was named as a trustee in an estate, and there were two children. One was perfectly fit to handle the money. The other was not. Nothing wrong. It's just the money would have gone for anything else other than shelter and feeding. And because I was the one writing the checks, I said, you can't do this. This is going to last you for a certain number of years. It may look like a lot of money, but over 25 years, it's not a lot of money. And I had, I think, four attorneys that never went to court, but, you know, with threatened lawsuit. And I said, you know, you all can do what you want, but the more they spend on legal fees, with all due respects, we would have a common sense approach that if you want to say that it's for X, Y, and Z, that's fine. Unfortunately, the will wasn't that well drafted. And it worked out. And finally, I talked to the beneficiary, and I said, listen, you can do this until the money runs out, but, you know, I'm not going to do anything crazy with it, and it's got to last you, you know, for not your lifetime, but probably the next 10, 15 years. Anyway, how would you get over something like that?
So they felt like you felt like in that case, like this trust was set out, you're the trustee, but basically the beneficiary complained to you about wanted you to, you know, spend more money than you thought was sort of wise to do. Is that correct? Like it wasn't for a good reason.
Yeah, they wanted to go bride shopping in another country. That's what one was.
Well, I think that leads to a big thing is that when you're naming a trustee, you want to name somebody who can tell your child, no, you cannot go shopping in another country. Or no, you cannot buy that convertible, but I will help you buy this nice Corolla. And the trustee needs to have a good relationship with your child too, because it is such a pull there, with you being in that position, having to say no. I hope you at least had a good relationship with that person because, you know, it could be some bad feelings if there's not that strong foundation of a relationship.
Actually, at the end, it was fine. But the beginning and middle, it wasn't brutal and it wasn't nasty. It was just trying to get the point across that this doesn't last till forever. And so our young desires might want to be sidelined for future benefit.
Did you know the family? One thing I had with a client that she wanted me to impress upon, she was an adult doing her estate planning documents, but she said she had a trust set up for her, and very responsible person. But she said what was hard is her parent never informed the trustee that they were going to serve. And so, you know, she passed, and that was the first time hearing about it. I was just curious, Bob, in your case, like, did you know in advance in these documents that you were appointed as trustee, or did it just come up at death?
Actually, the answer was yes, and the individual that passed said, treat him nice because he's the one that's going to take care of you after I'm gone.
At least they did it. That's one thing we recommend. Please, I know it's sometimes a hard conversation, but you can always, by the way, offer the trustee can be compensated or get reimbursed for things that could be in the trust document. Guardian, too. Sometimes people leave money directly to the guardian for caring for their children. That's possible in the document, too, if you want to. But just let them know.
Actually, the example I gave happened three times. One was the worst, but the other two. And then after a while, I'm too old to be named to handle somebody 13, 14, or 15. So I'm not in that arena anymore.
Yeah, that's for the best. I know, not for you, but yes, I'm sure you're like, woo. It's not always an easy job.
To me, it was interesting and working with the way people think. And sometimes there'd be relatives that, you know, you had to deal with, or, you know, somebody said, well, this child, it wasn't a child at that point, he's probably 30, you know, they're not caring for themselves. And I said, I can only do so much, I can't do that. But it gets back to somebody's going to be there, not that I didn't care, but a family hopefully is going to be more attuned to checking up on it than maybe what I would, plus it was out of town. The family was out of town, the individual was out of town, and I was not.
And you know, that brings up another point, Bob, about naming your trustee. And if it is some with minor children, we do recommend that you name the person who's the guardian. It should also be the trustee, because it kind of creates that parental role. And then when the guardianship ends and they turn 18, you maintain that kind of you know, ruler of the purse, so you still kind of maintain that parental role. I know it's slightly different in the situation you just said, but that is a consideration that I talk to clients about when they're thinking of naming their guardian. And then you get people who say, oh, well, you know, he or she's a wonderful caretaker, terrible with money. Well, then maybe in that case, it would be a better idea to name another person to serve as the trustee. But what situations I want my clients to avoid is having their guardian have to call somebody else to ask for money, like for a coat. That just seems pretty ridiculous, things like that. So, you know, it's a balance. You have to consider what's best for your family.
Okay, that's...
And I think one thing to Lacey's point, though, is sometimes you can't. Like, don't let that stop you. If you find that the guardian, you know, is great, but they can't manage stuff. As she said, the roles can be split.
All right, we've talked a lot of different and interesting topics. But if I was listening to this, I'd say, well, how can I get in touch with these people? So what's your contact points?
We're part of Handler & Levine LLC, and that's in Bethesda, Maryland. And my email address, you can always, you know, contact me, is Anne at handlerlevine.com. And Lacey?
Yep, mine is Lacey, L-A-C-E-Y, at handlerlevine.com. So feel free to email us if you have a question. I'd be happy to answer it if I can.
Okay, and if I'm not mistaken, prior to the pandemic, you had offices not just in Bethesda, but around the Beltway. Is that fair to say?
That's right. At the moment, though, and we can meet with anyone from Maryland, D.C., Virginia, by Zoom. So we're typically handling that that way,
right,
virtually. But yes, we meet with clients in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia.
Okay, and you're dealing with people in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. They're not all born and raised in Metro D.C., so they maybe have assets outside the tri-state area and the like. So when preparing these trusts, is that difficult? Because then you probably have a place to go or a person to go to the tougher questions about the laws and say Pennsylvania than it would be in D.C., Maryland, or Virginia, or California. So you got to be aware of that as well. And the parents, eventually, they may be not going to stay local. So if somebody does consider moving, I'm sure they have a list of people that they want to call, but I'd imagine the attorney's right up there in 1, 2, or 3, I would hope.
Absolutely. And we do have a lot of people, even, you know, of course, with the federal workforce, too. They might take a federal job somewhere else, or, you know, they move back and forth. And I think the key to remember, like, as a parent, and you do have to update these, I would recommend updating these documents if you move, but just have the set. Don't let that stop you. But please, like, what you need to keep in mind is everyone needs, like, a power of attorney document, a healthcare directive, which each state has its own, and it's easy to update, but attorneys do this as well as part of comprehensive planning. You need to make sure your beneficiary forms are complete. And you're like, what are those? Because sometimes I want to note that sometimes people forget, particularly if they're not local. Even attorneys who are outside the Beltway aren't aware of this, but unpaid comp. So everyone, if you're listening in and you're a federal employee, make sure that your FEGLI, TSP forms, unpaid compensation, FERS, DSRS forms are up to date. And there's a way, by the way, with children that you can tie those into those testamentary, these trusts that we talked about. You don't generally want to name your estate directly, but there is a way to tie it into these trusts. So you have that. You have a will with the trust that names the guardian. Maybe you want to avoid probate and you have something called a revocable living trust. But you can take this and have an attorney look at it from another state or just update them. But just always keep in mind that sort of set of documents. You need power of attorney, healthcare directive if you have minor children, a temporary power of attorney for minor, will with a testamentary trust for children. And if you're trying to avoid probate, then you have a revocable living trust.
Very good. We're about ready to take a break and let the listeners hear about what NITP can do for them. But as well, when we talk, this show goes up on the net, right, maybe half an hour after we're done with the show, and it's archived as well. So it's not necessarily it's today and it's gone. It's on the website. And by the way, NITP doesn't sell anything, so you can feel safe going on to the website. But anyway, let somebody more eloquent explain it.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
All righty. Welcome back to For Your Benefit, and Lacey and Ann. We have 15 minutes left before the end of the show. So how should we use those minutes wisely?
Well, I kind of want to talk about some things that might seem simple, but that I definitely just want to mention because I think they help. Tangible personal property. If you want something to go to a specific person, you should put that in your will. Or if you think somebody, your kids might fight over something, put it in your will. That's something that kind of is overrated. Everyone walks in and they say, oh, nobody would want any of my stuff. But it's something that I just, you know, hoping to, that anyone listening might ring a bell for them to think about.
And to your point, Lacey, with that, with just tangible personal property or stuff, this is an area where I even have adult children. When I joke about kids, I'm often talking about my lecture people in their like 60s, but like adult children who care about their siblings, but sometimes they haven't talked to them for years or they're very annoyed about this point. Their parents died and they didn't specify certain things. And you as the parent don't always know what sentimental attachment someone has to items, and it's better to find out in advance and give that item either before you die to them or just say in the will or to your children, my daughter gets this piece of art, my son gets this pocket watch, and this is how it is. So that's just one point within the will that's a good point that, you know, you're trying to prevent arguments. One thing that I think we wanted to go over too, or I wanted to talk about some of the considerations with people who are like single parents or people who are part of second marriages, with guardianships and the like. We didn't cover it, but one question that I get asked is what rights, like what if I'm a single parent, I'm divorced, what's the biological parent's right over my kids? Sometimes they don't want that parent involved, and what can they do? And in our area, it differs a little bit around the country, but for a lot of states, we would encourage single parents to come in and appoint a guardian in your document. You're allowed to generally appoint the guardian, but just know that the biological parent does get first right over your child. But in case they're not in the picture or not around, you appoint who you want as the backup, and you certainly don't need to appoint that person as the trustee of the money for your children. You get to pick whomever you want, and it doesn't have to be them. But that is a question we get. Do step parents have rights to visit and things like that after someone dies? The answer is, unfortunately, in our area, there's no general rights for step parents in that regard, but always the court will try to look at what's in the best interest of the child in those cases.
So after you've worked with the clients and you've perfected this document through a lot of changes, additions, and subtractions and the like, they have this. Do they share that with the children? I mean, a very, very young child, I don't know that you're going to make impressions that'll last a lifetime if they're less than a year old. But how about when's the time to suggest to the parents? Now, you can't very well say you have to do this, but to suggest to the parents, is it the teens? Is it the late teens, early 20s, after school?
Well, Bob, I'll tell you what I tell clients to, if your children are named in the documents, and by that I mean the health care directive or the power of attorney, I would recommend that you share that with them. Because if something happens and you need to use one of these documents, it's always in the middle of the night or it's always an emergency. And so it's better for them to have it so they can take, and a copy is sufficient. You don't need to give the original power of attorney to anyone. A copy, is just as effective as the original. And then the will and trust is something that I tell clients it depends on what their thoughts are. I certainly wouldn't share it with a teenager. Definitely not giving my will to my son right now. He's 6 months old. But maybe in their 20s, late 20s, is something that I think maybe I might share it, or tell clients to share at that point. But again, if they're named, then that's something I would consider sharing.
Yeah, or at least tell them where it's located. And sometimes, Bob, we'll, particularly with the younger generations, they're not interested in getting paper of anything. So you can always scan and send it to them. But copies of everything are accepted, but you definitely need the original will. So you have to be careful about storage of that document. And if you're going to store it in a safe in your house, for example, please give someone else the combination to that. So they can get in and get it.
Alrighty.
And also be careful about putting.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Just storing the will in a safe deposit box. Be careful about that. I've seen that come up a lot, where it's in the person who passes away's name alone, and it's a huge pain to get the original that needs to be filed. So it's better to, keep the original maybe with your attorney. We keep documents for clients, or even I know in Maryland, the Register of Wills will allow you to file the will with them, so they have it too.
So when the will is, again, finally crafted, we will have somebody use the term young and somebody that's an adult. So do we share the information to somebody young? Let's define young as under 18. And
it depends on your kid, but generally not. I mean, I think that sometimes you might I do let my children know. I don't have a 6-month-year-old, but I have young children. I have a 7 and 11-year-old, and I'll let them know that I've done their documents, but I don't let them know what's in there. And just in terms of the guardianship, I think kids sometimes want to know or think about, like, you know, it's a difficult discussion, but if mom and dad, if they pass, like, where am I supposed to go? I like my kids to know, and I think it gives them comfort because they ask these questions, actually. There's a backup plan. Like, we know, hey, look, if we're gone, there's lots of people who love you, and you're going to be taken care of, and this is where you'll go. So I'll explain it in that sort of way, but I'm not going to show them any documents. Now, I know I have some clients who have really wise, savvy teenagers who want to know everything. They might know a little more, and that's fine. And the other times you don't want them to know. And you can just let the responsible parties know, like, oh, here are where my documents are located. I do think we've talked about it a couple times in this, during this hour, but if you have special needs children, you have a level above other people with planning. Like, you might not share this with your children, but you will want to let the person know who's taking care of your children. Like I mentioned, a letter of intent earlier, like, you're going to have a special needs trust created. It's a different type of testamentary trust than what Lacey mentioned earlier, where things go out by health, maintenance, and support. For special needs children, they will not have any control over this trust, and the trustee makes all decisions about their care, because it's so important that you don't leave assets directly to a special needs children, because it will impact all the benefits they can get from federal and state government, all those means-based benefits, and it will jeopardize their ability to get SSI and everything. So you want to make sure there's a special needs trust, and tell that person and have that letter of intent explaining their care, and provide that. In those cases, we don't talk to the children about it, but just make sure that you talk to the trustee.
How about the parents? do they discuss this? I asked somewhat the same question earlier. Is there a time they shouldn't be talking with the children's age? Or it's going to vary by the child, I'd imagine. Some are going to be more mature at a certain age than the other. Some maybe don't care as much as the other ones. So it's an interesting dynamic if there's more than one child.
If parents have multiple children and they want to name them all on the documents, that for, you know, to serve as a power of attorney or personal representative, that can kind of create a mess. Too many cooks in the kitchen. You know, in a time of stress, your kids working together, their personalities might clash a little bit. So in that case, I usually try to steer parents into naming just one child if there's a child that has a better skill set for that. If that does create problems, you know, just within the family, there are certain things you can put into documents. Like in our power of attorney, we have a provision that if the agent is going to change something like a retirement beneficiary or life insurance beneficiary, they have to get the written permission of all children. So no child feels that their sibling is acting, you know, in their own self-interest kind of thing. So I think it's just it's a personal decision, Bob. You have to look at your own family dynamics. My parents have shared their documents with me, probably because I helped draft them. So my brother is perfectly reasonable and is the backup, but I'm going to trust an estate's attorney, and he's a police officer. So I think it's just family by family. I have friends where, you know, there's a lot of conflict in the family. So maybe that would be a situation where you wouldn't want to share it with both children. But those are my
thoughts. That happens sometimes, right? I have clients who don't want to share it with both adult children because one of them can cause some issues. But sometimes, like, if you can have a family meeting, like, particularly if they're in a second marriage situation and there's complex family dynamics, and you mentioned some of the scenarios, Bob, where you're the trustee. It is hard, but if you can have a family meeting and say who's in charge, you don't have to share the documents, but just say, you know, this is who's in charge, and you can tell the person in charge where they're located. Some people do not share the documents, but they'll just say this is where they're located in this situation. And plenty of parents do that as well with their adult children. They don't want them to know what they're getting in advance, you know, so... it just depends, as Lacey said.
So if they're children and one is anointed as the one to take care of the assets, does that cause friction? Why am I not the one? Or do you ever do it with committee? The committee might be a rough thing to do, but if let's say there's two or three kids, all, if you will, of normal mind.
Sometimes that does cause some people get hurt. They're not sure why. It gets down to feeling like, oh, this person must be mom or dad's favorite, and they were always the favorite. Now, other people are like, this is the one kid out of all five of us that all of us can talk to. When I say kid, again, I mean like somebody who's like adult, like, you know, older than 30. But yeah, so they'll talk to him. Some people are fine with that. But that's why I think it's part of the parent's job to let the other ones know maybe why. I would not recommend, Lacey, like, I wouldn't recommend ever having, like, for example, a power of attorney generally with joint agents or a healthcare directive like that, because, as Lacey said, too many cooks in the kitchen. But you, for example, with the healthcare directive, if you had a committee or multiple children decide, they can all be on HIPAA, but that means like they can get access to information and doctors. But if you're getting down to it with the end of life decisions, doctors do not want to be the arbiter of your family conflict. And if you have a committee or something like that, it could cause just litigation. What do you think about this, Lacey?
Oh, I totally agree. I think I really try to steer clients to only have one person or child named. Because if you think about it, and I'm going to jump to the personal representative role, if you have both children, both of your children or all of your children named, you know, children have different styles. And if you think about it, they're in the midst of like a very sad moment in their life. They just lost their parent, and you're throwing your children into a situation where they have to not only try to interact with each other without dragging in the emotional aspects of everything, but having to go to court together, sign all the documents together, call the utility companies together to get things shut off because they're co-PRs. I think it just creates a mess that can be avoided by, as Anne said, just have an honest conversation with your family. I'm naming this person because he or she is local. He or she, you know, is the child that we all kind of go to for, you know, everyone has the family member, right, who serves in these roles. In my family, it's my dad. Everyone, you know, everyone names my dad. And everyone has that family person. So I think it's a natural fit for most people who that person should be.
Very good. We're running somewhat not tight, and we've got about a minute and a half left. Final contact points?
Like sort of different things for people to consider?
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, to get in touch with you.
Oh, sure. Again, you can reach us at Handler & Levine, and I'm Ann at Handler & Levine, and Lacey, you're Lacey at Handler & Levine.
Very good. So yeah. Andrew says your time is about up. So just final 30-second comments.
Oh, quickly. Make sure you look at your
beneficiary forms. What do you think?
5 years. Yeah.
Please do planning if you're a parent. Do not sidestep this. Remember that your beneficiary forms are estate planning documents. New rules have come out about retirement documents and how to best leave those to your children. That's a whole separate discussion that we can't get in today, but you'll gain so much and be happy. Like if you can get a comprehensive estate plan done, we don't like doing fear-based planning, but you know,
okay.
Get it
well-
done.
Well put for the last 50-some minutes, and it's time to say goodbye. Thanks for coming on the show, and let's do it again.
Thanks,
thank
Bob.
You so much for having us.
All righty, bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.